The Gaza Health Ministry, meanwhile, says the regime keeps denying hospitals fuel for the generators in violation of the truce. The four-day ceasefire came into effect on Friday, after nearly 7 weeks of Israel's constant bombardment of Gaza. On Monday, the two sides agreed to extend the ceasefire for another 2 days. The same day, Hamas released 11 Israeli captives. In return, some 33 Palestinian inmates were freed from an Israeli jail in the occupied West Bank. That was the latest and fourth phase of a prisoner exchange under the temporary truce. Many of the Palestinians released from Israeli jails under the Gaza truce deal were children, but hundreds more remain locked away. In this report by Iran's Arabic news network Al Alam, we will hear from two of the released children and their family members talk about their plight in Israeli jails and their appreciation of the resistance groups who secured their freedom.
I arrived home with a two-day delay because the Israeli army was attacking the Jenin refugee camp. It's difficult to travel from Ramallah to here because there are so many checkpoints. But thank God, I finally arrived home. After the war on Gaza started, Israeli guards would beat us up in jail and swear at us and fire tear gas at us. Thank God that we were released. I hope the resistance fighters stay safe and, God willing, they will soon celebrate victory.
We are grateful to the resistance fighters. God willing, they will achieve victory against the enemy and secure the release of the rest of the Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails.
The conditions were difficult for us after October 7. The Israeli guards would storm our cells and take our clothes. They also cut our food rations.
I have the indescribable feeling of a mother who sees his son after months of imprisonment. Thanks be to God for the breakthrough. We were afraid of the sentences that were due to be handed down. My son was freed in return for the blood of 14,000 Gazan martyrs.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has released a letter by an Israeli captive that was addressed to the fighters who accompanied her during the period of captivity in the Gaza Strip.
Thanks to you, and thanks to other kind people we met along the way, my daughter considered herself a queen in Gaza. And in general, she acknowledges the feeling of being the center of the world. We haven't met a person on our long journey, from the military to the leadership, who did not treat her with gentleness, care, and love. I will forever be a captive of gratitude because she did not leave this place with a lasting psychological trauma.
In the letter, Danielle expressed her gratitude to her captors on behalf of herself and her daughter, Emilia. She described their treatment at the hands of Hamas fighters as extraordinary and called their humanity unparalleled. Other released Israeli captives had also earlier testified to the good treatment that they had received while in Hamas captivity. After being released on humanitarian grounds, an 85-year-old Israeli woman said the Hamas fighters provided all the needs of the captives and gave them the same food that the captors themselves ate. Well, medics in Gaza have witnessed heart-wrenching scenes caused by Israel's airstrikes and shelling. They struggle to save lives in medical facilities, facing shortages of fuel and medicine due to both the attacks and the regime's full blockade. Let's listen to a British Palestinian surgeon recounting what he saw and experienced in Gaza. He was speaking at a news conference in London.
One of the most horrific scenes I witnessed in Shifa Hospital was when, after the air raid and the dead and the wounded were brought in, members of the Shifa medical staff and nursing staff would be running frantically in the emergency department, looking at the faces of the wounded and the dead to see whether their relatives had been amongst the wounded, and in many cases their children had been amongst the dead and the wounded. During my time at Shifa Hospital, it became apparent that 40 to 45% of all the wounded were going to be children. That there were the primary target of the bombing was people's residential homes.
After the attack on Ahli Hospital, I had to take a patient out who had a penetrating neck injury. On a stretcher, and I walked into the forecourt of the hospital where the missile had landed. There were lots of bodies lying there, and I remember to my right, as I was carrying the stretcher with three other paramedics, that there was an amputated arm of a child, a forearm of the child on the floor.
Israeli troops have killed two more young Palestinians during their fresh raids on several areas across the occupied West Bank. The regime's forces killed Malika al-Barghouti by live fire in the village of Kfar Ain, west of Ramallah. Separately, the Palestinian Health Ministry reported the killing of Yassin Abdullah al-Asmar in an Israeli raid on the town of Betunia, also near Ramallah. Another youth, aged 23, sustained injuries there. The Israeli regime has ramped up its attacks across the West Bank since October 7. That's when the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas launched a surprise operation dubbed Al-Aqsa Flood against the Israeli regime. Since then, nearly 230 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank. The EU foreign policy chief has slammed as appalling a proposal by the Israeli cabinet to fund new settlements in the occupied West Bank amid the regime's war on Gaza. Joseph Borrell condemned the Israeli settlements as a grave breach of international humanitarian law. He said the proposal is not in self-defense and will not make Israel safer. The Israeli cabinet is about to decide on allocating more than $80 billion for settlements in the occupied territories. The Palestinian presidency also warned of the implications of the plan on regional security. It said the budget is part of a comprehensive war against the Palestinian people, their land, and their sanctities. According to the UN, some 700,000 settlers live across the West Bank and East outlets. Israeli settlements are considered illegal under international law due to the construction on occupied land. More rallies have been held worldwide in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza, with protesters calling for a permanent ceasefire. In France, thousands demonstrated in Lyon demanding an end to Israel's massacre of civilians in the Gaza Strip. In the Spanish city of Barcelona, people took to the streets on Sunday, voicing their support for Palestinians while urging the extension of the four-day truce. Americans in New York City also gathered in Manhattan, disrupting Black Friday shopping, chanting slogans against Israel. Police arrested over 30 people during the demonstration. Thousands also protested in Morocco's Casablanca, as well as the beachside city of Durban in South Africa. Demonstrators everywhere are calling for an end to the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians.
Jamil, 11 years of age, Salma, 16, Jawan, 2, Mohammad, 13. These are the names of just four Palestinian children who have been slaughtered in Gaza since Israel started bombing the besieged territory on October 7. Their names, together with those of other 5,000 deceased Palestinian boys and girls, were placed on makeshift tombstones and displayed in Esquilino Square in the Italian capital to remember all children killed during Israel's ongoing brutal military assault on Gaza. The initiative, dubbed Stop Slaughtering Children in Gaza, was carried out by AOI, an association of NGOs operating in the international solidarity and cooperation sector, representatives of trade unions and other civil society organizations, together with members of Italy's Palestinian community, attended the demonstration.
You cannot be a member of the United Nations, signing accords and voting resolutions that are enforced only if they suit specific interests. This way, the credibility of the institutions is badly damaged.
Palestinian authorities have reported that more than 6,500 minors have been killed in Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip so far. Earlier this month, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that Gaza was becoming a graveyard for children, with hundreds of girls and boys killed or injured every day. As 1.6 million Gazans have been displaced from their homes, many forced to move to the south of the Strip, there are concerns that a large number of them may end up in refugee camps.
You know the resilience of the Palestinian people. We will not leave our land. This is our land. This is our right. This was very clear from our people in Gaza. They prefer to live, you know, on their destroyed houses rather than to live outside of Gaza.
Some at the demonstration said an increasing number of people in Italy are choosing to stand with the Palestinians despite the mainstream media coverage of the conflict being completely biased in favor of Israel.
I have stopped following the Western media outlets for quite some time. They should be ashamed. We have the right to be informed honestly and truthfully. Give us the truth, and citizens will then choose which side to stand for. I'm disgusted. These media are all complicit in the mass slaughtering of Palestinians.
Hundreds of demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have been held in cities and towns across Italy since the start of the war in Gaza over 8 weeks ago. Pro-Palestine rallies were held in Forlì, Ravenna, Cremona, Asti, Reggio Emilia, Genoa and Piacenza last weekend alone. Max Civili, Rome.
In a remarkable display of unity and solidarity, the Palestine Freedom March took place in the heart of Lahore, just a few miles from the U.S. consulate. The proximity of the march to the U.S. consulate added significance to it, as the rally sought to convey message not only to the international community, but specifically to the United States, a key supporter of Israel in the war on Gaza.
Israel ek fascist.
The whole world now understands that Israel is a fascist regime that has occupied Palestinian territories. Israel sheds the blood of Palestinians to continue its existence in the world. The Israeli policy of oppression has been defeated now. These worldwide protests indicate that the concept of peace has won and the narrative of oppressors has been defeated.
The convergence of the people from different backgrounds symbolized a shared commitment to the Palestinian cause, underscoring the gravity of the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip.
People around the world, including Pakistanis, are on the streets and condemning the U.S. and its illegitimate child Israel for their actions in Gaza. Due to increasing public resentment, the U.S. and Israel are under tremendous public pressure, and the real face of the Zionist regime has been exposed in the international community. No oppressor can resist this public pressure anymore.
The event not only highlighted the immediate concern for Gaza, but also exemplified the broader call for justice and peace in the region. United in their demand for peace and justice, the participants of Palestine Freedom March fervently called for a lasting ceasefire in Gaza.
The ongoing protest rallies, boycott of pro-Israeli products, and systematic fundraising initiatives are the examples of how deeply the Pakistani society is committed to helping Palestinian people who are confronting Israeli aggression in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Lahore.
Palestinian resistance factions in Syria organized an event titled Salute to the Martyrs, in tribute to those killed during the recent Israeli aggression against Gaza. Those in attendance confirmed that the Palestinian cause will always remain their main priority and that resistance is the only way to victory.
We in Syria always confirm that the Palestinian cause will remain our central cause, our compass and our guide in all efforts and struggle until victory and liberation are achieved.
We are committed to resistance because it's the only way and the only solution to liberating every inch of Palestine by the will of God.
The walls of Damascus Citadel were crowned with the names of Gaza martyrs, while participants carried the flags of Syria and Palestine, held banners and lit candles in their memory. They highlighted that the blood of martyrs has defeated the Israeli plans to eliminate the Palestinian cause and displace the people of Gaza.
Our message from Damascus to the world is that Palestinian blood and the blood of the resistance in southern Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Iran, and Yemen have led to the freedom and victory for Gaza and Palestine and the liberation of our prisoners one by one.
We affirm our support for the steadfastness of the Palestinian people and every drop of blood that is being shed until the liberation of all lands from the Golan to occupied Palestine with its capital Al-Quds.
Participants affirmed that the bloodshed in Gaza by the evil Israeli and U.S. regimes is not in vain, and the criminal leaders of the Zionist regime must be brought to justice for the genocide and crimes against humanity that were perpetrated against people in Gaza and all of Palestine.
Here in this emblematic place, in front of Damascus Citadel, Syrians and Palestinians renew their pledge to stand firm and defeat the Israeli regime for the sake of Palestine and all those who sacrificed their lives for the liberation of Al-Quds. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
And that does it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
If the BRICS countries can unite around the Palestinian cause and punish the Zionist regime in any serious way, this would lay the foundation for long-term change, which would highlight the growing irrelevance of the UNSC as a political body capable of making life-saving choices. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, on Tuesday, November 21st, the BRICS Economic Bloc convened an emergency virtual summit to address the ongoing Israeli aggression on Gaza. Notably, the summit was held at the request of the Islamic Republic of Iran, in which President Ebrahim Raisi raised several demands and suggestions. The BRICS Economic Alliance accounts for a large chunk of global GDP and is committed to representing the global majority through its induction of six new countries in August of this year, including Iran, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Argentina. Though it does not have the same diplomatic clout on the world stage as the United Nations, the countries part of the alliance have enough economic and diplomatic soft power to force significant changes on their own. President Raisi has been quick to recognize this power. The demands raised by the Islamic Republic of Iran at the summit are in line with its calls since the beginning of the Zionist regime's onslaught on Gaza, which has now killed at least 15,000 and displaced thousands more. This brutal aggression has been exacerbated by the United States, which is the primary culprit in the oppression of Palestinians, using the Tel Aviv regime only as a tool of executive power. President Raisi has highlighted for some time that the United Nations Security Council, of which the United States is a permanent member, has failed to act to save the lives of Palestinians. The United States has sabotaged every effort in the past 7 weeks to demand an end to the aggression on Gaza, citing its commitment to the defense of the occupying regime. The four-day truce announced recently and confirmed by both the Israeli regime and the Palestinian resistance group Hamas came despite efforts by the U.S. to keep the pot boiling. In its statement, Hamas made it clear that its hands remain on the trigger if the Zionist regime breaches the truce deal because they know what the regime is capable of. It has brazenly violated over 60 UN resolutions over the years and simply cannot be trusted to honor any resolution or deal. Furthermore, the resolutions adopted by the UNSC do not call for a sustainable solution to the Palestinian question. It only kicks the can down the road as hundreds to thousands of Palestinians continue to be murdered at the hands of the Zionist occupation year after year. If the UNSC can't resolve it, perhaps it's time to rethink things and try a new approach. That's where the BRICS bloc comes into play. Though no formal declaration or commitment has been made, the countries have now for the first time been put to the test on how they can navigate a critical situation like the Zionist aggression on Gaza without the United States in the room. Most UNSC resolutions are heavily influenced or created by the United States. This often results in bitter political stalemates or half-measure solutions that do not solve anything. Several key demands were raised by President Raisi at the BRICS summit recently. There are demands to stop the aggression on Gaza, lift the blockade, and allow humanitarian aid, not just for 4 days. This is typically a demand even echoed by some representatives within the United States itself, despite the Biden administration refusing to allow it. Iran insists on a few more finishing touches that can solve the problem in its entirety. Citing the destruction of doctors, journalists, women and children, as well as the usage of banned chemical weapons like white phosphorus, President Raisi took this opportunity to demand that Israel be designated a terrorist state and supported the idea of BRICS countries uniting to demand that the International Criminal Court pursue charges against Israel, and added in the United States for its direct hand in the aggression on Gaza. He also called for severing economic ties with the Zionist regime, which is in line with his demands to oil-rich countries to cut off all oil and energy to the Zionist regime. Most of what the Iranian president said in his speech is what the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has also repeatedly stated in his speeches in recent weeks. President Raisi asserted continuing interactions with the fake Israeli regime, especially in the military and economic fields, means helping to continue the crimes and killing of women and children, which is condemned and blamed by all nations. He highlighted not only the U.S. role in political support for the Zionist terror in Gaza, but also questioned the validity of the UNSC itself. The US, France, and the UK, all of whom are permanent members of the UNSC, freely sell weapons to the Zionist occupation. Three countries that profit off the brutal massacre of Palestinians cannot be trusted to draft resolutions for truly advocating for the livelihoods of Palestinians. President Raisi said, "How cruel is it that America, Britain, Germany, and France, as Western powers, sent all kinds of weapons and bombs to Israel on a daily basis and at the same time opposed the ceasefire. America, along with Israel, has closed all ways to help the people of Gaza and paralyzed the UN Security Council." Parrying the demands for aid and charges of terrorism against Israel, President Raisi suggested that the BRICS nations should rally around the Palestinians' rights to self-defense, which is an internationally recognized law that the occupied can resist the occupier by any means necessary. This contrasts the environment in the UNSC, where the U.S. has blocked Russian ceasefire resolution because it did not condemn Hamas. Recognizing the Palestinian right to self-defense against a brutal occupation is an important and just demand, but may be the primary point of disagreement between the various heads of state. The Islamic Republic, however, does not recognize the Zionist occupation, correctly referring to it as a fake and illegitimate entity. So, the bar has been set for BRICS' first political test, and it has been set by the Islamic Republic. Though BRICS countries do not see completely eye to eye, and may often not be on the same page at all. For example, India enjoys warm relations with Israel, even though it is rather new. This will be an opportunity to see how they navigate a humanitarian crisis as an economic bloc without the political stonewalling from Washington. Even if maximalist demands are not met, the BRICS countries have a chance to now show the world that they really are building to represent the global majority, as stated by Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. 4 days of a ceasefire have passed and a two-day extension has been announced. This after 48 days of an Israeli genocide on Palestinians in Gaza. Hamas and the Israeli regime have agreed to release more hostages, and Hamas has announced that it is willing to release all of the captives if Israel releases all of its Palestinian hostages, which, of course, Israel calls prisoners. There are up to 10,000 Palestinian prisoners or hostages currently being held in Israeli prisons. This is the reality for Palestinians living under an occupying force. Whether we look at Gaza or the occupied territories, the regime tries to create hell for the native Palestinian population. Is there any choice besides resistance? I'd like to welcome my guests to the spotlight. Joyce Mumbi, Research Fellow, Global Policy Institute, London Metropolitan University of Budapest. Hartley Schlanger, spokesman of LaRouche, organization out of Germany. Thank you both for being with me. I'll start it off with George. Now, the ceasefire has been extended for 2 days. I want to start here. I want to get your opinion about the fact that there is even a discussion about if and when this genocide will continue. I mean, how can there even be a debate? Why isn't Israel just told it's over, no more, it won't be allowed?
Well, ideally, that's what should happen. There's only one power in the world that can do that, that has any influence and sway over Israel, and that, of course, is the United States. The United States is not willing to do that, but the United States is willing to exert some pressure as a face-saving exercise, because ultimately this is a huge embarrassment for the United States. There is revulsion throughout the world about what Israel is doing, and revulsion particularly among America's European allies. So given that this and the anger that is being directed at Israel is being now directed at the United States as Israel's enabler, the Biden administration has to do something. It has to come up with a formula, a face-saving formula, whereby it can be seen to be on the side of the good guys, on the side of the victims, the innocents, while at the same time enabling Israel. So it's a very delicate and, of course, a dishonest fine line that the United States is drawing, but that's the situation. So these kind of extensions of the ceasefire, they are being facilitated and enabled by the United States.
Hmm. Well, Harley, I mean, looking at this onslaught that took place, this genocide that took place in Gaza, what did Israel get out of it? What has it accomplished?
Well, first of all, I have to realize that Netanyahu has a commitment beyond getting back the hostages. Netanyahu's commitment is the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. Netanyahu is a greater Israel fanatic, and his intention is not to stop and to allow these pauses because he's under enormous pressure internationally and even within Israel. But he said, and he's made clear, he's going to intend to continue the war as soon as the ceasefire or the temporary truce ends. He said the other day, when he was asked about this kind of image of Israel, he said, "History does not favor Jesus Christ over Genghis Khan. History favors the strong." So his view is that he's going to be strong. He's going to carry this out. Now, what your other guest said is absolutely true. The U.S. could stop this. I just wrote an article about how Eisenhower intervened in 1956 in the Suez Crisis when Israel, England, and France invaded Egypt. And Eisenhower threatened to use the economic power of the United States against the British, threatening to dump the U.S. holdings of pound sterling bonds if the British didn't end this invasion. And within 24 hours, the Brits, the French, and the Israelis pulled back. So the U.S. does have the power. The question is, how do you overcome the insanity in the U.S. Congress, which is largely controlled by the military-industrial complex, which wants more wars? And we have to have a bigger mobilization in the United States to put pressure on the Congress and on Biden.
Okay, well, George,
Do you think that the Israelis have discredited themselves in so many ways? I mean, if we look at, from a military perspective, we're talking about the fourth powerful, most powerful military in the world, allegedly, and this regime has been up against resistance force, which has no air force, it has no navy, no sophisticated weapons. Yes, Israel has inflicted a lot of pain on the civilians, but that doesn't take much military expertise to drop these bombs on civilians. But from that military perspective, why have they really not been effective?
Well, probably because Israel isn't militarily particularly effective, and its intelligence services are not particularly effective. The Israeli myth has been assiduously cultivated by, obviously, the Israeli government, the Israeli propaganda machine, and the Israel lobby in the United States. And so they've been basking in this glory of what happened in 1967, which is now almost 60 years ago. But ever since 1967, none of Israel's military ventures have been particularly successful. They've gone from one fiasco after another. You know, there are several wars in Lebanon. Then, of course, you had several wars in Gaza. And they never come to any successful conclusion. And of course, we know about their intelligence failures, their vaunted Mossad, which supposedly can get any terrorist anywhere. They almost always miss. They almost always kill innocents and claim, well, we've got the PLO terrorists. They never do it. So Israel just isn't that powerful. What Israel is very good at doing is at propaganda. I mean, he's very, very good at controlling the narrative. It's very good at controlling the political debate in the United States. I mean, it takes some doing. When you look at the polls, some 70% of Americans want a ceasefire, and about 5% of Congress wants a ceasefire. Now, that takes some doing, and that, you have to say, no one other than Israel can pull something like that off.
Right. Well, what about that, Hartley? Let's talk about that narrative that George said, because Israel's forte has been Hezbollah, controlling that narrative. But it does seem that in this, during this genocide, we have seen massive demonstrations across the world and unbelievable amounts sharing information as if people, and many of them were, it was the first time that they had heard about the roots of the Israeli regime, what this is all about, that Palestine is occupied. Your take on this part of it, and how significant is it?
Well, I'm living in Germany now, and I see how they're playing this in Germany, that Israel was the victims of the Nazis, and it can never happen, be allowed to happen again. And therefore, Germany should be providing weapons for Israel along with the United States. This is the narrative of victimology. But if you look at the actual situation in Palestine, you see who the victims have been. The Palestinian civilian population and the ability to function as a national entity. The Israelis won't allow it. Now, in the United States, most of the major media is controlled by a group of five companies, basically a cartel, which is very much influenced by the money coming in from American Zionists. Although I will say that there is beginning to be a little bit of a shift in that. Even the Washington Post and a couple of other pro-war publications have had to report that Israel did not prove the case that there were tunnels and a command center under the Al-Shifa hospital. Even that's beginning to crack. Look, there have been large demonstrations. There were 10 to 20,000 people marching in Berlin on Saturday. I think the key is that fighting to get the true story out of what happened after 1967, after the UN Resolution 242, and effort after effort for resolving the situation has been sabotaged by Israel, which of course says that it's the Palestinians who have sabotaged it.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
George, in your perspective, I want to look at your idea of globally. We're talking more about governments and even a lot of the people, how Israel was looked at prior to October the 7th and since that time. What has changed?
Well, of course, there has been a global consensus pretty much since 1967 as to the outline of a lasting Middle East settlement, which is the two-state solution. And the Palestinian state would constitute the West Bank and Gaza, which was only 20% of the historic Palestine, the British-mandated Palestine. So it would be a very substantial concession on the part of the Palestinians. But nonetheless, that was the global consensus. That was shared by the Soviet Union, that was shared by most of Europe, and of course Asia and Africa. The United States has supposedly gone along with this. It has supported Resolution 242 in public, but in actual fact, it has basically turned a blind eye and has generally supported Israel's undermining of Resolution 242, which began immediately after the end of the Six-Day War with the building of the settlements. It just went on and on and on, 56 years of settlement building. The United States could have put an end to it at any time it chose not to. So that was the view before October the 7th. What October the 7th has shown is such savagery on the part of Israel. I mean, if one looks at the casualties, 14,000 dead in Gaza, and we know it's at least 40% children. So if we assume that of the rest of the, so if they're children, that means they're innocent by definition. You know, they had nothing to do with October the 7th. Then if you look at the remaining 60%, if you say that of that number, 50% are Hamas fighters, I don't think it's anything like that, but nonetheless, let's just assume that's the case. That means 70% of the deaths that Israel has committed are civilians, are innocents. 70% are innocents. That is a staggering number, and I think that has really shaken the public opinion in countries. I mean, certainly even in the United States, but definitely in Europe. That, of course, is different as to the governments. The governments are a different matter because the governments like to keep in with the Americans. They, you know, that's another issue. But that, you know, but as far as the public opinion is goes, that has been very, very impactful.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harley, when we look at this situation with, of course, this genocide on the one hand taking place in Gaza, the regime also had to handle the southern border. Well, its northern border, dealing with Hezbollah, and then, of course, the southern border dealing with Hamas and the situation. I mean, this is something that the regime hadn't faced in this way before. What type of role do you think that having a double front played in adding frustration to the regime?
Well, I think you also have to consider the West Bank, where we see settlers running wild, attacking innocent Palestinian civilians there. But I think, look, if the U.S. sent the fleet, the large fleet, the two aircraft carrier strike groups and other ships, with the idea that this was to deter Iran, it makes no sense. The U.S. show of force is not going to stop Hezbollah or Hamas, because, in fact, the ships may become sitting ducks for Hezbollah if they decided to fight them. So what we're facing is the danger of an expanded war which comes largely from Israel and from the United States foolishly saying we'll support Israel to the end. And in a sense, the same thing Biden says about supporting Ukraine to the end. The Americans are discredited internationally. Look at the Global South. Look at the United Nations General Assembly. 120 nations voted for a ceasefire and only 14 against it. So we're looking at an overwhelming part of the world which has chosen to defend the rights of the Palestinians over the greed of the Israelis to grab all the land. So the only question that really remains, and by the way, Netanyahu may extend a truce a couple of days, but he's not going to stop his bloodthirsty attack on the Palestinians. That does have to come from the outside, and it's going to have to come from the United States. In the short term, it's not going to happen because of the Congress. But in the longer term, Biden's up for re-election. He's facing a catastrophe in Ukraine and a public relations catastrophe with the Israel-Gaza situation. So there is a chance that this can be turned around, but it's going to depend on the American people showing a little bit of gut and grit and going out and learning what the real story is in Palestine, and taking that into the street and against the war hawks in Washington.
Well, George, how has this genocide not only revealed the truth of the Israeli regime for those who didn't know, but also the whole Western hegemonic front, that silence for so long, not only silence, we saw Western leaders going to Israel and giving their support, their thumbs up to Netanyahu in the middle of the genocide.
No, it's quite remarkable. Biden, who notoriously didn't go to East Palestine after the train derailment, and which was a huge environmental catastrophe, he just didn't even bother to go visit. There was a horrific fire in Hawaii. He didn't go, couldn't be bothered to interrupt his holiday to go. I mean, finally, after several weeks, he decided to show up for a few hours. Yet when he came to Israel, he just rushed off and, gave a bear hug to Netanyahu. And he's now given, I don't know how many addresses to the American people on the subject of Israel. Again, he seems to be taking the plight of Israel and, what Israel is enduring as far more important for him than what Americans are enduring. And that, it's a reflection of America's political elite. Now, in the case of Europe, Europe is now so totally subordinate to the United States. I mean, they're now essentially just the vassals of the Americans. The European Union is just simply an appendage of NATO. So whatever their personal feelings may be, and Emmanuel Macron, the French president, has blurted out in a number of interviews how disgusted he is by what Israel is doing. Nonetheless, publicly, he follows the Americans. The German case is very interesting. I mean, they're, as my colleague pointed out, they're saying, because we have a special responsibility toward Israel because of the Holocaust. Well, you can argue it the other way, which is that the Palestinians have had to suffer as a result of what the Germans did. I mean, it was, it wasn't the Palestinians who committed the Holocaust.
It is actually quite mind-boggling. It's quite mind-boggling when we look at this. Okay, so, all right, it started, well, we can say it started with the British or whatever, but with the Germans doing what they did, so the Palestinians have had to pay the price. And didn't we see the way Germany has stood steadfast with the Israeli regime against the Palestinians? It is absolutely mind-boggling. And while we are in Germany, let me cross back over to Harley. I mean, Harley, the Germans are just a whole different case. I mean, it is quite mind-boggling to see the reaction coming out of Germany to all of this, when basically the Palestinians had nothing to do with this to begin with, but they're the ones suffering.
Well, there's been a real brainwashing done on the German people around the Nazi period. The idea that all Germans are guilty and therefore Germany must never assert itself as a national sovereign nation. But just in the last days, the German Council on Foreign Relations has called for a massive increase in military production in Germany, a massive increase in the numbers of people in the Bundeswehr, the German army, and a change in the mentality of the German people to become, quote, war ready, unquote. Now, as our colleague just said, what's mind-boggling about this is that Germany's not threatened by anyone. A realistic assessment of the situation, if they had it, the Germans would be very responsive to what's happening to the Palestinians, and many of them are upset about it. But they're terrified by the reaction from the United States, and so they're continuing to send weapons into Ukraine. And by the way, you talk about ironies. The Germans are supporting a government in Ukraine which has Nazis in its defense and security positions.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things going on with Germany. I mean, you guys couldn't even protect yourself with the Nord Stream. It's
exactly.
Mind-boggling.
Didn't even raise a peep about Nord Stream,
yeah,
which was terrorism conducted by the United States against an ally.
So now, what's key now? Because we only have like a minute left. And going back to the subject at hand, when we see the Europeans, the way they're reacting, we see the whole Western hegemonic front and the way they're acting. What needs to happen, not only to have a permanent ceasefire, but really to end this siege and to end the occupation?
Well, the only thing that could make a difference is a change in attitude on the part of Washington. We haven't seen any evidence of this, but, you know, Biden knows that much of his base, his kind of leftish progressive base is very unhappy about this. He's doing terribly in the polls. He's facing a very difficult re-election next year. He can't afford to have anyone staying home, sitting on their hands. And this might have some effect. I think it is having some effect on Biden, in putting pressure on Israel just to bring this thing to an end. Because the longer it goes on, the more difficult it's going to be for me, because Biden and the Americans are being blamed for this with very good justification. So I think that's, in the short term, that's one thing that could change if the Americans really start putting pressure on Netanyahu, knock it off. Remember, Ronald Reagan did this with Menachem Begin during the 1982 invasion of Lebanon. There was a point at which Reagan said, enough is enough. He got on the phone to Begin and said, knock it off, and Begin knocked it off. There haven't been too many presidents since then who have been ready to do that with Israel.
Okay. All right. And on that note, thank you both for being with me. George Samoulier, Research Fellow, Global Policy Institute, London Metropolitan University, Budapest. Harley Schlenker, spokesman of the LaRouche Organization, Potsdam, Germany. And thank you for being with us for another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you right here next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan. La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atal, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani is the guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom to answer today's questions. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of Sakaratul Maut. In Surah Qaf, Ayah 19, we have this term, Sakaratul Maut. We can say, let's talk a little bit first about the definition. And are there any degrees to Sakarat al-Maut or not?
For Sakarat al-Maut, I think the best equivalent is to translate it as the last moments before death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what happens, last moments before death, that would be termed as Sakarat al-Maut, which is, of course, since they are very much painful, sometimes horrifying kind of experiences that people might have, that's why it's called Sakra.
Mm-hmm.
Sakra is a kind of horrifying, or let's say very much painful kind of experience.
Yes.
That's why it's termed as Sakratul Maut or Sakaratul Maut. The plural form is Sakarat.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that a person who is about to die experiencing before death is termed as Sakaratul Maut.
That's right.
Yes.
So the final moments before death, is it?
Of course, yeah.
Is it recognizable for some people or not?
You know, we have different kind of mouth or death.
Mm-hmm.
One is the real death that happens and you never revive or come back to the life. But sometimes death might happen, but again, you may come back to the life. So for this kind of people, they can talk about whatever they experienced during the process of death. From the biological perspective, biologically talking, of course, something that is happening is totally physical things, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But from the perspective of a spiritual perspective, or let's say, according to the riwayat and ayat, we have different kind of mouths. Some of the death are very much easy, let's say, enjoyable kind of mouth or death for the pure people, for the good people. Sometimes it is mentioned about some of the scholars that the angel came to them
mm-hmm.
and give, for example, flower to the person. The moment they get the flower, they die.
Mm-hmm.
Such an enjoyable, let's say.
It is like, for example, giving
it's
a flower.
Very sweet moment. Sweet, yeah.
That's very enjoyable.
It depends that how kind of personality you have, what kind of person you have. Your death depends on your character, your, let's say, characteristics.
That's right.
Your personality, yes.
Okay. Of course, usually the people do not know when the time of the death will come, exact time of death will come.
Yeah, no one knows.
Are there any recommendations according to Islamic beliefs to make this Sakarat al-Maut, the final parts, or the hardships at the time of death, easy for a believer, a mu'min, or not?
Yes, we have in our riwayat some very nice pieces of advices to the people.
Yes.
That if you want to have, for example, easy kind of mouth or death, first of all, the rizayat or satisfaction of the mother of the children is very much significant. It plays a very great role. For example, if your mother is satisfied with you and always praying for you, and you will always at the service of your parents, particularly your mother, then of course you will have very easy kind of mouth. It is mentioned that there was a young man at the time of the Holy Prophet. He was about to die.
Yes.
But he had a very, very kind of horrifying experiences. He couldn't die easily and all.